So this morning I have a special treat, maybe for me even more than some of you. But I wanted to start with reminding you that we are in a series called Sustainable Faith, right? Started a couple weeks ago. And the idea is, what are the things that we can do over a lifetime that sustain our faith, that keep us going and growing in our faith? Because we know that if we're not growing, then generally we're dying. I was thinking this morning on my way in that we like to say, well, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll keep getting what you've always got, right? I'm not actually sure that that's true. There's also this thing called the law of diminishing rewards. Is that in economics, maybe? An economics thing? That often if you keep doing what you've always done, it actually gets less and less of a reward. And I think that all of us keep changing over a lifetime. And so if you get stuck doing the same things you've always done, over time those same things may not work for you in the same way they've worked in the past. It's the same God, but the way that we connect to God needs to change and grow with us. We need to keep going and growing. So the first week, we talked about with sustainable faith that you can't just be an observer. It's good to observe. It's good to learn. But eventually, you have to enter in, right? You have to receive what Jesus is offering you. You have to step into his light and receive and do something with that knowledge that you've been gaining. You have to enter in. And then last week, Pastor Eric talked about regularly reevaluating where you are. And not just by any standard, but by the standard of love. Right? 1 Corinthians 13 says, if you have all of the knowledge, if you are right in every way, but you don't have love, you're nothing. So it's important to continue evaluating your heart of love, both for God and for others. Today we'll see where we go with our sustainable faith. We're going to learn from a couple of friends of mine, Roger and Deb Varland. And to introduce them, I want to tell you a few short stories about, I don't know Deb as well, but Roger was actually one of my very first professors in college at Spring Arbor. So I just figured that out. That would be 29 years ago, which makes me feel old. Not sure how that makes you feel. I'm about to celebrate my 30th anniversary from high school, so I know that'd be 30, 29 years. So he was my Core 100 instructor that very first year when I came to campus. But I was thinking over the last couple of days of a few lessons that I have learned from Roger in those few short years at college. And of course, college is a very formative time in your life, so a lot of things stay with you. I actually just realized that Roger was the very first person who ever took me to the Art Institute of Chicago, which has become one of my favorite places. I actually love fine art now, and before that time, I really didn't even know it existed. Roger probably doesn't remember that. I had a 2-credit art foundations class, and they took us on a field trip to that art institute, and I was in awe, truly. I was just in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and my daughter was begging to go in, and we didn't have time to do that this trip. So look at that, generations of appreciating the beauty in the world. But there's another couple of things that I learned from Roger. And again, he will probably not remember this. I remember him coming either to a class or teaching on a Wednesday night. We had a Wednesday night service for the college students. And 30 years ago, you'll find this hard to believe, but you know how words come in and out of being a popular word that everybody says is kind of a slang thing. And at that time, the new, very cool word for cool was awesome, that everything was awesome. And I remember Roger coming to that Bible study on that night, and he said that he and his small group were talking about how important words are, and that the word awesome had just become this popular thing that everybody was throwing around all the time. Everything was awesome, right? And it's still used that way, actually, in a slang way today. If something good happens, a really simple, oh, that's awesome. And Roger's comment was, you know, before this, awesome was really more a word that you used for God. That is when you were filled with awe, was when you saw something maybe really amazing that God created, that when you came into God's presence, you were filled with awe. And he said, I have made a commitment not to use that word lightly, but to only use it in a way that points back to God. Now, you could see that as a legalistic thing, but what that said to me in that time was it helped me think about how does the world's culture influence me? How does the world's words influence what I say, what I think, what I do? And it helped me stop and think about that. It helped me think more about God and who he was and how I talked about him and how I talked about things. And some of you may know that words are really important to me to this day. When I use a word like that, it means something to me. And I attribute that back to just probably something that in some ways seemed a small thing that he was sharing with a group, but that influenced me for a very long time. The last thing that I want to say, and he probably does remember this, I believe he is the one who came and taught us again on a Wednesday night about what it meant to follow God's will. And when you are 18 to 20 years old and you've been in church all your life, one of the most important things you want is to follow God's will. And so your thing is always trying to figure out, what is God's will for me, right? So I was asking that question all the time. And Roger taught that night about God's will in such a way that it released me from the need for it to be a perfect thing, that maybe if I understood it wrong and didn't get it right, that it would be okay because God was bigger than that. And for a perfectionist pastor's kid like me, to be able to trust that God would lead me through both my successes and my mistakes was a very good thing. So I think about ways that he has influenced my life, and so it's a pretty cool thing to have him here today. And if you guys will both come on up, Roger and Deb Varland are now serving at Rift Valley Academy in Kenya. So they're going to share a little bit about what they're doing there. You might want to pull yours back just a little bit so I can see Deb too. And also, I'm going to have them share a little bit about what faith and sustainable faith looks like for them as well. So, first of all, introduce yourselves a little bit and tell us about Rift Valley Academy.
Well, good morning. It is great to be here. And we bring you greetings from our home church, Spring Arbor Free Methodist, and also from the Africa Inland Church in Kajabi, Kenya, where we worship most of the time now. As just briefly, Joanna mentioned, we've been involved at Spring Arbor for a long time, from the time we got married, and a few years ago, finished up there and moved to Kenya to teach at Rift Valley Academy, where we had taught 3 years kind of scattered over the past 30. We had been there short term, and we decided to go back long term. But let me show you some pictures to explain that real quickly here. First of all, this is our whole family. And the two kids in the front look a little bit older. We have two older children who are out and about. The two boys in the back, we adopted when they were just wee young things. And they're now, next year, going to be junior and senior in high school, Reed and Sid. And yes, they're Kenyan. So part of being back in Kenya is a chance for them to reconnect because we adopted them. They came back to here in Michigan and grew up in Michigan. So they've really grown up in the States, and they're getting a chance to re-see Kenya. So the next slide. Rift Valley Academy is a school for boarding or for missionary kids. It's a boarding school. We have about 500 students there, 300 of them in grades 9 to 12. So the high school is kind of the main focus. But they come from 22 different countries. And so these multiple passports to just kind of symbolize the wide variety, as well as the next slide. This is Multicultural Day there. Take a day and celebrate where everybody comes from. So we got all the, you know, the flags up, and students dress up in their national costume and so on. So it's a very, even though it's an American curriculum, the school kind of feels like an American school, it's very international. The next slide. We raise the flag every Saturday or Friday, and that's the Kenyan flag. The first time people said, let's sing the national anthem, I almost broke into the Star Spangled Banner, and it was reminded, wait, we're in Kenya. So we sing the Kenyan national anthem since we're there in school, and a lot of school is outside. The next slide. This is the view from campus. We're on the side of the Rift Valley, so everywhere you go on campus is up or down, except for the buildings and the athletic fields. But on a morning this time of year when the clouds are rolling in, that's a dormant volcano across the valley, kind of a nice scenic view. Next slide. But this is what most of our friends are experiencing. We chose the good time to come home for our home assignment, and it's rainy and foggy. We were at about 7,500 feet there, so it's up in the hills. Next slide. One of the perks of living that part of the world, this isn't the only one, but it's kind of one we miss when we're here right now, big avocados everywhere, and this is about 40 cents at the local market. And so we love guacamole and fresh avocado and are going broke paying for it here. Next slide. This is a baptism Sunday, and so just like you would find, you know, churches here, the school offers baptism a couple times a year, and we gather around the backside of the gym and have a baptism morning. Next slide. There's a full sports program there. Happens to be our son, Sid, playing rugby. Many of the other sports you'd find here, soccer, basketball, volleyball, but rugby, because of the British colonial influence, is very popular in Kenya. And nobody plays American football. Rugby is a kind of a distant cousin. People run and tackle each other. Maybe that's what's similar. So next slide. Some other things we get involved in. This may come up later in our talk here, but Deb is involved in outreach at a local orthopedic hospital for children just outside the school's campus. And students come from all over the country, in fact, from neighboring countries, to get legs repaired and, you know, what we would think of as birth defects here. Sometimes it's broken bones, a lot of cleft palate surgery, those kinds of things to help bring students back, or children mainly, back into somewhat of a normal life. And the next, this is a local church that is run by a Kenyan friend of ours. He started church under this tree about 10 years ago and now has a, and they still do Sunday school outside. His small church building is in the background. The next slide. Our students are involved with outreach there on a regular basis. This happens to be clothing day. Some visitors from the States brought a big pile of clothing in their excess luggage. And so the students were unloading it from the back of the school bus here to be distributed to the people, you know, by the pastor and the rest of the congregation. And then finally, I think I have here one more slide. This was just last December. We were down for a celebration day and kind of a congregational group picture outside. So one more slide, I think. Yeah, this is our current card. There are some in the back, some out here in the Welcome Center. You're welcome to grab one on your way out, stick it on your refrigerator, and remember us. But again, what we're teaching at a school for missionary kids. It's a boarding school because their parents are out scattered in places where there aren't any educational opportunities or options. And so we have their children for 3 months at a time. They go home for a month, and we teach. We're not in a dormitory, but we're loving on the students really 24/7 for 3 months. And kind of surrogate parents in that sense, helping to raise them and grow in their faith, but also do school.
I'm just going to throw one more. Yep. Oh, okay. I'm going to throw one more thing in about
the families that we're serving, the missionaries, the missionary kids, their parents, like Roger said, are scattered around East Africa, especially North Africa. Here are some examples of some of what those families are doing. They're not all pastors. They're not all church planters, although that is common too. But there's a family in Nairobi that just opened a CrossFit gym, and it's their access to people. That's how they get to build relationships, because most ministry is very relational. We have a number of families in Uganda that have started schools. We have friends that are in Morocco where you can't be there as a missionary. So one is a physical therapist, and they have, access to people through that. We have a family that's in Tunisia in North Africa, and they are evangelists on the side. And then we have a student that's in the junior class in our son's class, and his dad is he's their Korean family. He's a Taekwondo instructor in Zanzibar, Tanzania. So just kind of give you some, you're like, wow, missionaries do that? And those are all really interesting examples of how God uses our gifts and talents.
And what led you to serving at Rift Valley? How did you guys get there?
Well, first of all, I think both Roger and I believe that we should all be living missionally wherever we are, that we should be looking, you know, try to be the hands and feet. And I'm assuming that you know, your hearts are drawn to that too, that you don't have to be. It's interesting. We were teaching at Spring Arbor and for a lot of years, and then we go teach in Kenya, and they call us missionaries, when we're really doing so much of the same thing that we did at Spring Arbor. We're loving and mentoring young people to hopefully know and grow in their relationship with Jesus. And we just happen to be called missionaries because we don't get paid. You know, we have to raise our support, but we're really doing the same thing, and all of us can be doing that. So I kind of wanted to throw that in there. I think the first time that we went to Kenya, maybe some adventure, mystique, ooh, Africa, let's check that out. And we also saw an opportunity to serve, and the school needed people that had our skill sets. So we were teachers, they needed teachers, we wanted to serve, we wanted to, you know, share Jesus, so we were able to do that. We had a love for cross-cultural learning, and so God opened the door for us. As we continued to go back time after time, I think we were encouraged by God placed role models in our lives. I don't always realize that until later. Later I go back and I connect the dots and I go, oh, God showed us, you know, through friends of ours, oh, that's a possibility. You know, you could be teaching in Kenya. And I think also that the final time, well, I don't know if we call this our last hurrah, but we were in Kenya in the school year 2013, 2014, and when it was time to leave at the end of that year, we just didn't feel like God was finished with us. We were only there on a year's worth of support, but we felt a prompting numerous times by God's Spirit that we were perhaps supposed to go back, that maybe we didn't need to continue to do the same thing we'd been doing, not that there was anything wrong with it, but maybe for our last 5 years of our teaching, we could be teaching in Kenya rather than continuing to teach at Spring Arbor, which is kind of backwards financially. You know, everybody said, you're crazy. You're not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to be, you know, making lots of money. And not that we make lots of money at Spring Arbor, but the world would say, oh, you need to be, you know, really kind of going for it your last 5 years. And we just didn't feel that's what God had for us. So really out of obedience, I think we returned to Kenya for our last 5 years.
So as I mentioned, we're in the Sustainable Faith series. And as I met with you guys a few weeks ago, I thought about when I knew Roger all those years ago and thought about how exciting it is that you're still following Jesus in adventurous even ways and risk-taking ways. So tell us some ways that you have sustained your faith over the years. What has kept you following Jesus?
That's a great question, and be careful. I'll run off into a longer sermon here. So I'll try to shorten up my thoughts. But sustain, faith, again, words meaning. Sustain, I think, often means kind of keep it at the same level. And I'm not sure that I want to think of my faith as just sustaining. You mentioned earlier, either, you know, living or dying. You know, it's kind of either up or it's down, but it's just maintaining the same. Maybe I would think with faith might not even be a good thing. Just sustaining is almost like maintaining. You can maintain. But I think to sustain requires renewal, refreshing, you know, kind of reevaluating. We heard about that. In moving forward. So I think Deb came up with this. I think it was probably been on a million T-shirts, but I heard it for the first time. There is no growth in the comfort zone, and there is no comfort in the growth zone. And I think it means, you know, looking for that next edge. There's a common phrase, a growth edge. Where's the growth edge? Well, I'd like to think of that, you know, in my faith. How can I move forward? How can I move deeper? And so I think it's being willing to take an initiative, look for ways you can engage your faith through fellowship, certainly being part of a body somewhere of people that can help you in that, to kind of, you know, the iron sharpens iron thing, to encourage one another. You know, I even watching my grill last night, you pull one charcoal out of that, it doesn't last very long. But when they're together, you know, the fire keeps burning. So I think fellowship is an important part of that. But again, being willing to, you know, find a new edge. I think there were pictures online of Joanna going over the edge this past week or something. But that whole idea of being willing to take on new challenges is an important part of finding a new intimacy with God and growing. Because if it's just the same for 30 years, it doesn't become the same. It just starts to diminish. I'll end it there, and I don't know if Deb wants to add to that.
Well, just a couple things. I feel that we have been very well loved and supported by our clan, by our church, and we have a pretty significant group of friends that they've got our back. And in a godly way, and they have always pointed us, like whenever we're as a group or as individuals asking questions of one another, we actually call it a clearness committee. Sometimes when we have huge decisions to make, we have a meeting called a clearness committee where we say, we ask hard questions. You know, have you emptied yourself? Are you seeking something for yourself? Are you seeking to serve God? And they've really helped us clearly try to answer questions. I've never felt like God has been restrictive. I think sometimes when people are like, oh, I don't want to become a Christian because that's going to take away, you know, all the cool stuff that I like to do. And when in fact, for me, that has knowing Jesus and seeking to follow has only opened doors and opportunities. And I think if we're knocking and walking, and that's been how we've made a lot of decisions, we go, okay, Jesus, we're knocking, you know, we're knocking on the door. You either open the door, you close the door. And if the door opens, we walk through it. And okay, we're knocking again. And that has been, a lot of our story has sorted out that way. And I think God has grown our faith that way. That certainly doesn't mean that when we walk through a door that everything's smooth and easy, because it hasn't been. As a matter of fact, the last couple years have been in Kenya, not because we were in Kenya, but because of other things happening within our family, have been very, very challenging, but growth producing. I've never felt like God called me to be normal, even though I do want to fit in with people, but I don't feel like normal is something that I want to aspire for, but also I don't want to pride myself in that either. James 4:8 has been of great comfort to me whenever I'm seeking to make a big decision. And it says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. So whenever I feel like we've got a big decision or I have a big decision to make, usually if it's big, it's we, because I don't usually make individual decisions when you're in a part of a family. But when I'm sitting with God saying, what do you have next? Usually the only answer I get is spend more time with me, spend more time with me, spend more time with me. And eventually God makes that clear by opening or closing doors. I've never sensed God's voice or God's literal writing on the wall, but I always have sensed it's a call to hang out more with God and listen and listen and listen. And that has kind of been a huge growth point for me.
That's awesome. All right, switching to a little different topic. Tell us about the joys and challenges of putting a bunch of cultures together in one place. How many countries did you say are represented there?
We've got 20-plus different passport countries, but I'd be quick to add that some of those passports we would say would be in name only. This is a quick little explanation. We work with a lot of third culture kids who have a passport country that they may have visited a few times in their lives because they've grown up in Africa where their parents serve. Some of our Korean students, in fact, just a month ago, I was able to meet with one of my former students from RVA who's a student at Taylor University down in Indiana now. And she's Korean, and she's basically spent her whole life in Africa. A few visits to Korea. I can't remember if she was born there, but she mapped it out for me one time, and it's just these little visits back to Korea. But she's Korean by, you'd say, ethnicity and her passport. But she's really grown up in Africa. She knows that much better. And within Africa, she's spent a number of years now at RVA hanging out with a lot of Americans, speaking English. So, I mean, she's an example of these kind of challenge about, you know, culture is kind of where your roots are, how you live and how you act. And we bring together a variety within the school, but then the school itself is trying to exist in the midst of a Kenyan culture. So it's a lot of trying to find common ground, kind of remembering who is the host, who is the visitor, honoring that relationship, but respecting those nuances, those little irritants sometimes get under our skin. Well, you know, why are those people doing that, or why are they different? And trying to appreciate that and come together. It's easy to think, well, I'm friendly, you know, I get along with other people, until those little things start to rub. Well, I don't kind of like that, you know, the way to do that, it's not very comfortable. But again, try to push for understanding, common ground, trying to, at least at the school, we're consciously aware this is international school, this is not an American school. And so even though there's a majority of Americans there, when July 4th comes, you know, business, you know, school doesn't stop. You know, it's just another one of the national holidays that we celebrate. Like we might have a Korean national holiday and, you know, Canadian Thanksgiving and those kinds of things. So trying to, again, I mean, nationality is just one part of cross-cultural, but trying to understand both sides or multiple sides of how people live. I don't know if you want to add to that.
I think that the environment that we live and work in, it's like an intersection of potential differences. And I love that. I think diversity is good because we rub off on each other. It's not always comfortable, but it's good. It's understanding that one doesn't have to be right and the other one wrong. A silly example is that, you know, sometimes when I take students to Kenya to visit, they go, oh, they drive on the wrong side of the road. I go, no, we drive on the left side of the road. The steering wheel's on the right side of the road, but by right, you know, like right-handed. But that one isn't right and the other wrong. That you can have two ideas that both could possibly be right. I think even seeing God through the same God through several different lenses. In other words, there can still be one God seen through different lenses, and that can be a very powerful thing. I actually asked our son, Sid, the one on the left, and I said, so what are some of the challenges? And he said that it's easy to be judgmental or offensive. So I think that can happen in a multicultural setting, and it can happen anywhere that we can take our judgments with us and be easily offended. And that, you know, those certainly aren't Christ-like attributes, but that can happen anywhere.
Okay, I think that was all my questions, right? Did I have one more? I want to just wrap up with a couple of thoughts. I was thinking this week of how inspiring it is to me that for both of them, at the end of their careers, they're choosing to do something outside of their comfort zone. And I was reminded of this little card that I've had up long enough next to my kitchen sink that you can hardly read it anymore. I can hardly read it, actually. And the kids and I read it and wrote it out several years ago when I was homeschooling. It's Hebrews 11:8. It says, "By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was going to receive as an inheritance. He went out without knowing where he was going." And that is especially striking because I just read that from the New Testament. Of course, Abraham is in the Old Testament, right? And sometimes there's a lot of stories in the Old Testament that we never hear anything more about in the New Testament. But Abraham is one that was repeated as a man of faith because he went out when God called him to go out. So when I think about sustainable faith, I think about pushing past our comfort zone. Of saying, if God is asking me to do something, and most often when it has something to do about someone else, when God's asking me to do something for someone else, am I willing to get out of my comfort zone in order to do that? I think that's one of the key ingredients of having a sustainable faith. If we always stay where we're always comfortable, and we're always about ourselves and keeping ourselves comfortable, I think it's hard to grow in our faith. But if we, like Abraham, will go out, and I remember reading all of the story of Abraham, if you sit and read it from beginning to end, God did not tell him where this new land would be. He had no idea. And in fact, he stopped at one point for a long time in one spot, and it was not the new land yet, right? So keep going. I think if there's one thing to close today, the message of today when it comes to sustaining our faith is to be willing to step outside your comfort zone, especially for the sake of someone else, and see how God grows your faith in the meantime. Would you pray with me?